Ready to level up your day? Then join me and my friends at LoneStarCasino.com. That's L-O-N-E-S-T-A-R Casino, where you can experience the thrill of Las Vegas, no matter where you are. LoneStarCasino.com is an absolutely free-to-play social casino with thousands of games, daily bonuses, free spins, and jackpots that pop like fireworks. Hit pause on life and hit play on LoneStarCasino.com.
Lone Star Casino is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit LoneStarCasino.com for more details.
Sign up today for an incredible welcome bonus. Play bold. Win big.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome in to Darren Donick and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick here with you on this Friday. Another pristine postcard kind of day. Take advantage of it. The temperature will not hit 90 degrees. We've got a nice level of humidity, a little breeze out there. Great day to enjoy the beginning of your weekend. Darren McFarlane will be along here very shortly. Chase McCabe is here as well, as we all broadcast from our homes again. We're excited about our show today. We've got a local product who just went in the first round of the Major League Baseball draft, which concluded last night, the five rounds. It was quite brief. We'll update that for you today. But Bryce Jarvis, the former Brentwood Academy Eagle, Duke Blue Devil, now a member of the Arizona Diamondbacks, at least drafted with the 18th overall pick. Threw a perfect game earlier this year. Was the unfortunate loser in that great pitcher's duel last year between himself and Kumar Rocker. So we will talk to Bryce at 10:15. Adam Vingan from The Athletic will join us at 11 to talk all things Predators, including the case for Roman Josi and the Norris Trophy. The voting going on right now, and it'll be concluded here very soon, if it's not already. Most of the ballots have probably already been cast, but we'll find out what Roman's chances are, and we'll pick Adam's brain about the return to play as we get a little bit closer to the hockey season renewing. We'll have You Just Made the List at noon today, plus Friday trivia at 1 o'clock. We're looking forward to that. So you'll have a chance to win some prizes. Get your thinking cap on. Get your brain ready for some sports trivia, because we're going to have some fun today. Chase, what's going on?
Oh, not a whole lot. Had a nice conversation with Chip Carey of the Atlanta Braves, one of your colleagues at Fox Sports, earlier on the rundown. So that was a lot of fun, because awesome. You know, he's one of the best in the business, but baseball, you hope, is close. And we also reminisced about 1998 in the home run race, because he was with the Cubs at that time, of course, so he was right in the midst of that. So it was a fun conversation with him. It's making me miss baseball even more, because we talked about my team and just how good they might be, but here we are. Hopefully they get it going at some point soon.
Well, I've noticed it's been awfully quiet the last two or three days.
Maybe that's good.
Maybe that's good. I thought the same thing. At least there hasn't been a lot of mudslinging back and forth. So I feel like maybe they're working on it. Maybe I'm just too optimistic, but maybe they're digging in and not talking at all. But the fact that nobody is reporting anything the last few days is quite intriguing. The draft went on last night. A few more Commodores picked. Mason Hickman from Pope John Paul II High School out in Hendersonville had a great season. He was the winning pitcher in the final championship game of the World Series. He had an excellent career. The Cleveland Indians picked him up in the fifth round. I thought for a while there, Chase, there may be a chance that he would come back. And there was some speculation, I think, among some insiders that follow the Vanderbilt program, he might be sort of on the fence, depending if he got picked. But I would think that if Cleveland decided to select him, they feel good about his signability. Jake Eater, the left-hander, who actually got the last out of the World Series, a hard-throwing left-hander, you knew he was going to be attractive to some people. So he got picked, as well as the great closer, Tyler Brown. So three more arms off the board, but if you take a look at Vanderbilt's pitching staff coming back, it still looks very, very deep and stacked, starting, of course, with Kumar Rocker. But fun to watch the draft yesterday, and now that's all in the books, and now we all wait as baseball fans to see if they can get back on the field here soon.
Yeah, I am just hoping that they come up with something, you know, in the next few days. And, I mean, we've had that conversation about will they get it done? What? How many games are they going to play? What's the season going to look like as a whole? At this point, I'm just ready for something. And I know that the commissioner could say, all right, we're just going to play 50 games and be done with it. I think we all are hoping for a little bit more. They've missed the boat. They're past the point of 100, but you know, could they still get 80, something like that in? It's just, you know, and Chip Carey said it this morning that it's a very, very bad look for baseball to be having the fight that they're having right now with everything going on in our country. So I hope that they are listening to that and they understand that this is just something that they're going to have to figure out and maybe, you know, bite the bullet, so to speak, on some of the money and give in, because you can't, if you're the players, the fact that you're saying, well, we already took one pay cut and you don't want to take another one. I mean, come on. Like, you got to get over that at some point, but it's the same stuff we've been saying for 3 weeks now.
Here's a stat for you. At the conclusion of the draft, remember, five rounds. What state do you think had the most players picked? What's the home state of the most players picked? There are the usual suspects, right? That generally produce the most players over the long haul. Do you know the three? They're the top three again this year.
South Carolina?
No.
See, you're more in tune with this than I would be.
Well, think about where you can play baseball year round in a lot of cases.
So out west? Somewhere out west, or Florida? Florida.
All right, Florida's number three. Okay. This year, Florida's number three. Florida traditionally is always up there.
Arizona?
No, actually no.
Georgia?
Nope. Georgia is definitely many years produced a lot of players, no doubt about it. It's a hotbed, especially the greater Atlanta area. But they are not in the top five this year.
Hmm. Alabama?
Nope. Think California? Bigger. Think big. Yes, California is number one. They had 23 picks this year from California.
And maybe Texas?
Texas is number two with 18. But here's the interesting part. So California first, 23, Texas 18, Florida 15. North Carolina 10, and Tennessee 10. So Tennessee had the fourth most players picked. And so I would also argue this. I think a lot of people have come around to this. It's certainly changed in my time that I've spent in this state. You know, since I came to Vanderbilt, and I have, of course, nothing to do with this number. But when I came to play at Vanderbilt, it was very rare. I don't know about rare, but it just was uncommon that you saw a lot of players from this area or from the state of Tennessee make it to the big leagues. They did not rank very well. But in the last 20, 30 years, the number of players from the state of Tennessee has gone way up. In fact, I think it's one of the more underrated states when it comes to baseball. And I think a lot of coaches would tell you that. So the talent level in Tennessee has gone up, at least at the top. So people can play the game. They can play the game in this area. So 10 players from Tennessee take it, the fourth most of any state in a five-round draft.
Yeah, so very, very cool. And I know a lot of lives changed over the last couple of days with the MLB draft. And it's going to look different. I mean, that's something that we've been talking about of what are the minor leagues going to look like here with everything going on. I mean, I think we all believe that the minor leagues as we know it are going to be quite different. But so where are these guys going to go, and how far away are they from actually playing big league ball? You know, I asked you guys the question yesterday, I guess it was, that do you think it rushes players to the big leagues before they're ready, because they're not going to have as many places to put them. So I just continue to ask that question of what it's going to look like and what they do now. I mean, I guess they just have to do some personal workouts and training right now, because there's nothing to really do.
It's tricky. It's tricky. We'll talk more about that part of it with Bryce Jarvis here in a few minutes. One other thing I want to hit at the top here, and I'm sure we'll come back to it at some point. I thought it was a bold statement. I don't know if it's bold, but it's noteworthy that Amy Adams Strunk spoke out, put a statement out as the owner of the Tennessee Titans about all that they're going through. A lot of people wondered. They knew how the players felt, right? The players have said, have had their voices heard strongly over the last week, 2 weeks. Roger Goodell followed suit. And then a lot of people, well, what about the owners, right? Not very many have spoken out. Amy Adams is one of about three or four that I've seen, and she put this statement out there. I want to add my voice and the voice of our organization to the calls for equality and reiterate our firm stance against all forms of racism. Hearts, minds, and institutions need to change throughout our country. Those who face racism need to be heard and, more importantly, understood by those who haven't listened before. Our organization and our players have dedicated time and resources to these issues through the We Stand For campaign, and we're making a difference in our own community, tackling issues like educational equity, judicial reform, policing policies, and assistance for underserved areas. It goes on with some more things, but I think when you put out a statement like this, Chase, we all can remember a few years ago where it was there was a lot more push and pull back and forth as to what is a team's, what's an organization's stance on some of the protests. And so it's sort of setting the table for basically, hey, listen, here's more of the statement, important part. Hearing our players and coaches speak over the last 2 weeks has been constructive to this vital discussion. I support our players using peaceful protests and their platforms to advance us in a nation. I would encourage those who haven't thought about these issues before to understand the pain, anger, and frustration of the black community. Black lives matter. We should all agree on that. So it's basically, hey, these protests are coming. Be ready for it. And understand and do a little self-reflection rather than push back. I think that's an interesting angle that is definitely different than the first go-round a few years ago.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I give Amy Adams strong props for making that statement and joining, you know, a lot of others in her organization that have been doing so. And you know what? One thing that I have really taken the time to look at and think about is that without sports and without that quote unquote distraction that we've had in the past, I mean, people have had to look at this and had to have these conversations, and this is good. This is going to make us all better and be good for our country and our community and for sports to have this conversation. And so I applaud her for that. I thought it was very well done. So hopefully some good can come out of it. And I believe that it will.
John Robinson was is the forefront yesterday as well in some of the conversations. Ryan Tannehill has been very highly praised for the way he has responded to all of this. But I think this is one thing that has come out in some of these discussions, particularly to the Titans, but I think it would have to happen in all NFL locker rooms. Hey, if we go out and we do the protests the way we want to do them, do we have your support? Are you going to back us up as an organization? That's been a key question. And the players have all said the Titans have been in support of those. And that is different. Remember, there was some conflict before, not only amongst, you know, the Titans. Remember the whole Seattle game? One of the things was there was a little confusion at the time. Mike Mularkey, he had to be very careful in what he said. You know, there was the whole, I don't want to offend any one area, the military, et cetera, the flag. But I want to back up my players. He was in a tough position. It sounds like they're trying to iron out those things right now on the front end to say there's going to be protests and we need to be all right with those protests.
Yeah, we do. And I mean that's how you're going to get the message across. That's how you're going to get people to listen. But the key word there is peaceful. And then having a conversation, peaceful. not just saying, "Oh, you're wrong." You know, because you don't believe believe what I believe, you need to change your, you got to hear both sides and then have a conversation. And that's what I think a lot of people are doing. You still have some that aren't willing to do that. But I believe that that's really where we're at as a society is we hide behind social media and keyboards and want to just yell at people. Now it's face to face sitting down and actually having a conversation.
Yeah, and the good thing is they can have more of these conversations to figure out what is the best, most effective way to protest between now and the time that there's actually a game, and what do you do when there's not a game, all of these things. So the conversations, the communication is a very good thing. When we come back, we will talk to Bryce Jarvis, newly drafted first-round pitcher for the Arizona Diamondbacks, grew up right here in the Nashville area. Stay tuned. We're just getting started on this Friday on Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. We are rolling on this Friday morning. Willie Donick, Chase McCabe here with you. We're having a little connection issue with Darren McFarland. Not uncommon.
3.5 months, and we've been pretty good. But
honestly, this is the longest time that we've had a connection issue, other than a little glitch here and there. So we've been very fortunate. But if you watch any national show that's been going through this with people broadcasting from different areas and the Zoom and all of that stuff, there are glitches that happen. But we'll get Darren up as soon as we can. In the meantime, we've got a fun interview. Looking forward to this because we've had a chance to talk to his dad numerous times over the last few years. I got a chance to work some Nashville Sounds games with him. His dad is Kevin Jarvis, but Bryce Jarvis now steps to the forefront. Brentwood Academy alum, Duke baseball pitcher, drafted in the first round the other night by the Arizona Diamondbacks with the 18th overall pick. Bryce, great to have you on the show. Congratulations on what has happened to you over the last 48 hours.
Hey, guys. Thanks. Thanks for having me on.
Well, tell us about what the night was like, what a process it was. And, of course, you had plenty of, as we say, curveballs thrown at you this season, unlike any other before. But it ends up with you achieving, I know it was probably a lifelong goal for you. So what went through your mind as the pick unfolded on Tuesday night?
Yeah, I mean, I think that day the time went by slower than any other day. You know, not having baseball these last couple of months to fill my time has definitely made me think about that night a lot more. And you know, as the day got closer, kind of the anticipation grew, and then even as the day went on, I just wanted the draft to start and the picks to start rolling off. And when I heard my name called, it was definitely fulfilling and super exciting, something I've been looking forward to for definitely my whole life. And, you know, it's definitely not the end, though. There's still a long way to go to get to where I want to be, but definitely a big step in the right direction.
Yes, no doubt. And, Bryce, I know there's a lot of dynamics that happened leading up to the draft and even while the draft is going on with the signability of different guys. So when did you know, when did you get the call from the Diamondbacks that you were going to get picked? Or were you just watching it on TV like all of us?
No, I got a call about 30 seconds before the pick flashed up on TV. So there was not much time between when I found out and when the rest of the world did.
Did you have any inkling of the teams that were most interested? We looked at some mock drafts and we were trying to figure out where everybody was going. We saw your name on a list with different teams, but did you ever have a sense that the Diamondbacks were the one?
Yeah, I mean, you try not to put a lot of stock into one mock draft or another, but just over the last couple of weeks, you know, talking to different teams, I definitely built a good relationship with the Diamondbacks and their local scouts and some of their front office guys, and they were a team that were definitely at the top of the list for me, and super excited to get the chance to join that club.
One of the things that we all marveled at was watching Al Leiter break down sort of your career path. And we've had a good chance to talk to your dad a few times about some of the things you've done to improve. But it really looks like you made a big leap. Now, we all saw you pitch last year against Kumar Rocker in that Super Regional, that classic game they were always going to remember. But you made a big jump even from last year to this year. Tell us about what your approach was at the end of last season to try to make a jump to improve your stock.
Right. So, you know, I was draft eligible last year as a sophomore, so got to kind of experience some of the things in the draft process, and you know, realized that I wasn't in a spot to go where I wanted to go in the draft and was going to need to put a lot of work into you know, my craft of pitching and my body in general to make those improvements. And so I took last off season off of playing in a summer league, which most guys go and do between the end of the college season and the fall when we report back to campus. And instead I chose to, you know, go work out and try to put on about 20, 25 pounds of muscle and add another pitch, a curveball into the mix to give me a third off-speed pitch, a fourth pitch, and kind of rebrand myself a little bit. I'd always been able to get guys out with the stuff that I had, but if I wanted to make a jump to go to the next level, I knew I was going to have to make those improvements.
Another thing I saw was that you went out and experienced this drive line. I've been hearing about this for a long time. I've never really looked at it in depth, but it really looks like it can help some players. What was that experience like for you? How valuable was it?
Yeah, it was super valuable. I think a lot of guys, when they hear drive line, they think of, you know, the weighted balls and the max velo pull downs into a net, you know, guys screaming all over the place, which there's definitely a lot of that. But the piece there that I was more focused on was their pitch design laboratory, and they have what's called motion capture analysis, where they put kind of the dots all over your body, like you see when they make video games or CGI movies, and you go through your pitching delivery and they track all the different points and analyze the efficiencies and inefficiencies in your delivery, as well as how the pitches move and how you can make adjustments both to your delivery and your release or grip for individual pitches to try to make them as good as possible.
Wow. So it's interesting because I think we get so caught up sometimes in the velocity, right? That's what everybody seems to be focused on. The radar gun, was it 93? Was it 95? How hard did this guy throw? And that is an important piece of the equation, Bryce, but I think what you're saying is that the other stuff is just as important, if not more important, when you put your craft together.
100%. You know, you need all of your pitches to work together, and, you know, hitters are getting better and better, and I think, you know, if you put a ball in a pitching machine throwing 100 right down the middle, I think any professional baseball hitter would be able to touch that up pretty good, just how good they are these days. So you need pitches that work together, and need to be able to add and subtract velocity and have pitches that move differently and kind of mirror each other if you want to be really good at getting guys out.
Chase, go ahead.
We're talking to Bryce Jarvis, and now with the Arizona Diamondbacks, so congrats on that. And, you know, I know this is obviously a weird time, as you guys were talking about, not being able to do as much workouts, and usually you would go through an entire process of being introduced to your team. So, but not playing during, you know, the college baseball season, actually getting to enjoy the draft, I know that must have been nice for you.
Yeah, it was awesome. You know, the draft usually happens during the college postseason, and so getting to be with my family was going to be up in the air, but having the opportunity to be at home and be surrounded by friends, family, supporters, teammates, coaches, that all helped me get to where I am today was really special, and I was super happy that they got to share in that moment with me.
Do you allow yourself to, I guess, and I've asked people this before, be a kid, so to speak? I mean, you saw your dad play, and do you allow yourself to just kind of have that moment of, you know, going back to when you were a kid and imagining being in the major leagues? Have you done that at all?
Yeah, I think that's something that, you know, anybody who plays baseball and aspires to play at the next level, you know, does. In their off time, it's hard not to. I think growing up around my dad and around the big league game, getting the perspectives that I did, give me a little bit more of a unique view, and I can understand it at a little bit of a deeper level. But at the end of the day, you know, I think fulfilling those childhood dreams, you know, is something that, you know, I was looking forward to doing for a long time.
We're talking to Bryce Jarvis, first-round pick of the Arizona Diamondbacks, grew up here. And Bryce, I want to ask you about your high school experience, because this area is now getting more and more. We were just talking about this before you came on. Tennessee, as a state, had tied for the fourth most players picked with 10. It's really rising in the overall talent base. So tell us about just growing up in this area and how baseball is developing here.
Yeah, I mean, baseball has definitely come a long way since, you know, I moved here and started playing here. I know a lot of guys I played high school baseball with and against all went on to play, you know, high-level Division I baseball. And I think, you know, all of that talent in one place is just going to breed better talent. It kind of builds on itself. You know, when you play against better players, you know, it makes everyone else better. So, kind of refreshing that cycle and having people play against, you know, players of that caliber is just gonna be better for baseball in the state of Tennessee.
You played at one time for the Knights organization. My son is playing right now as we speak in the 14-year-olds over in Atlanta. I know you know what that is all about. What advice would you give parents developing players about the best path? Because, you know, you always hear the right stories and you also hear the wrong stories about, you know, maybe playing too much, playing only one sport, all of these other things. So what's the right balance as you're developing? What advice would you give?
Yeah, I think one of the big things I would say is, you know, play as many sports as you want to and as you enjoy for as long as possible. I think a lot of people are, you know, specializing in baseball at such a young age. And, you know, while baseball might be the thing you want to do, I think all the other sports, you know, basketball, football, soccer, whatever you want to play, you know, you can learn other fine motor skills that can apply to baseball or you know, that you don't actually pick up practicing baseball, but it can still help you. So I think I would say, you know, play a lot of sports and make sure you're still having fun and not focus on baseball only too soon.
I know it was disappointing not to have the college season play out because you guys had a really good team and you guys were so close to getting to Omaha, which would have been just a huge milestone for the Duke program. I do want to ask you about a couple of the games that we're all familiar with. Number one, last year, the matchup against Kumar Rocker, we've never had a chance to talk to you about it. We have just been gushing about that game. You know, anybody who was there, it was just a tremendous atmosphere, not only because of the no-hitter that he threw, but because you were basically matching him. It'd be one thing if it was 5-0 or 10-0, but every pitch was so intense because the game was on the line. What was it like from your perspective?
Yeah, that was definitely a really fun game. Obviously, it was unfortunate to be on the losing end, but when someone puts a performance like that together, you just got to tip your hat, honestly. But being in the other dugout in the middle of the game, I think I was just telling myself to focus on what I can control, and that was how I was pitching and not how whoever was throwing on the other side was throwing. You can't really get caught up in any of that because, you know, it makes you lose focus. And I had to just go out there and take things one pitch at a time and try to come out of the game with my team in the best position I could put them in. And that's what I feel like I did.
Now let's fast forward to earlier this year. It's still getting warmer. The college season's just unfolding. And you're able to throw a perfect game, which is rare on any level of baseball. But college baseball in particular, you know, with the aluminum bats and everything like that, what an unbelievable thing to have on your resume going forward. Just what's that feeling like as you're going through, especially the last few innings, and everybody in the park, I'm sure, is aware of it, yourself included. How did you try to mentally get through that?
Yeah, it was really just a lot of the same things, going out there and taking things one pitch at a time. I think in terms of getting into the later innings, there was one batter, I think I had 3-2. It was my first 3-2 count of the night in the seventh inning, I think. And, you know, I was really hoping I wasn't going to walk him. And I think I punched him out to end the inning on a outside slider. And after that pitch got called, you know, it was all downhill from there. I was just riding the adrenaline. And the eighth and ninth innings were just felt like blurs, honestly. I was going out there and just trying to empty the tank with every pitch and, you know, doing the same thing that got me through the first 6-7 innings, and looked up in the ninth and things fell my way. So it was definitely a team effort. It takes plays behind you in the field and, you know, coaches in the dugout making calls. So that's definitely a game I'll never forget and hopefully something I have the chance to do again.
As you look back, when you were warming up, did you feel like you had your best stuff? When did you kind of know that you were going to be in the groove?
Yeah, I mean, anytime you're warming up before a game, you try not to take those feelings into the game, whether they're good or bad. You know, sometimes you may feel bad before a game and end up throwing great, and the opposite can happen too. But before that game, I definitely felt really good in the pen. I remember turning to our pitching coach after I threw my last warm-up pitch in the bullpen and saying, you know, I think everything's working today, and him just turning back to me and saying, all right, well, let's go have a game. I don't think any of us ever thought about the possibility of a perfect game in that moment, but it was definitely cool to look back and remember feeling that good before the first pitch was even thrown.
Well, that's great. We had a fun conversation with your dad. I know he and your mom were both in the stands, and because it was cold, he said they sat together, which is rare. They're usually, your dad says he usually paces around and is moving around, but because of the weather, so maybe they should sit together more often, I guess, when you coach.
I don't think my mom can handle that many more of those. There's a reason they watch from different spots. They take take the game in a little differently, both in their own way. But it was awesome to have my family there. They try to get out to as many games as possible, and I was super thankful to have them in the stands and have them be able to see that.
Well, Bryce, thanks a lot for coming on and giving us your perspective. We wish you the best of luck going forward. I know you've got the next chapter, at least today. You're going to go. I know you're about to go work out. So thanks for spending a few minutes with us. Enjoy the moment, and we'll be following you as we go forward.
Sounds good. Thanks, guys. Really appreciate you having me on.
All right, that's Bryce Jarvis from Brentwood Academy. Grew up here, and now a first-round draft pick from the Arizona Diamondbacks. One of 10 players from the state of Tennessee drafted in a 5-round Major League draft, the fourth highest among the states. When we come back, more of Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back to Darren, Donick, and Chase with Donick here with you. Beautiful Friday. Coming up at 11 o'clock, Adam Vingan from The Athletic. We will talk Predators with him. Speaking of the NHL, interesting story, and this is a theme that I think we're going to start hearing more and more about, and that is things related to the subject of testing for the COVID-19 virus. With the NHL moving into Phase 2, starting to have the workouts, announcing this week that Phase 3 is targeted for July 10th, where the teams will actually work out as a full group in the training camp leading up to hopefully the beginning of the season a few weeks after that. The Bruins came out and made an announcement today that one player tested positive for COVID-19 in returning for Phase 2, but then was subsequently tested twice and tested negative, and he remains asymptomatic all through. So this is the dilemma that is really starting to unfold here. You also had the SEC's task force pretty much come up and say they don't recommend widespread testing of all athletes because neither infectious disease expert in the group saw it as overly beneficial. So we've all been having this pounded into our head, you got to test, test everybody, test as often as you can. But that thinking, I think, is evolving, just like everything with this virus, as they find out more about it. And one thing that is definitely true is you do have a lot of tests that are inaccurate, right? One way or the other, false positive. So did this guy have it or not? He tested positive for it, but then he tested negative twice for it. So did he ever have it? He's asymptomatic, so we don't know. But as it pertains to the SEC, Chase, it's going to be interesting because I think, number one, it's too expensive, too impractical to think that you're going to test all of these football players so many times. You know, it's not really financially feasible. So how do you work around that? I think some infectious disease experts have said, you know what, let's concentrate more on the things you can control. Cleanliness, make sure the locker room is clean. Let's do the distancing, wear the masks, and go from there.
Yeah, I mean, that's a big question. You know, the money. How much is all this going to cost? I mean, you want to make sure everybody's safe, but are you feasibly able to do that? So that is a very good question, or a very good observation, I should say. But I think that with the SEC, this is where it gets different. Like with the professional leagues, I mean, you kind of have your system in place. You're going to go to the bubbles that we've all talked about, but with collegiate sports, you're dealing with students, student athletes, whatever you want to say. And I think that there are maybe bigger risks involved. Plus you have bigger numbers. I mean, there are more Think about how many college football teams there are in this country.
Yeah.
And what you would have to do. So I certainly get that. And who's paying for it? Is it the conference? Is it the school? Is it the NCAA? Is it a collective? That's what I think they have to try and figure out. But it's a very interesting and I was reading the article that you were referencing from The Athletic, and I think it's a very interesting thing, that situation that now we're in. And I believe that we look at, okay, yay, pro sports, they're close to coming back. It may not be as easy with so many colleges.
Well, let's give you a couple of details, because this is really interesting. This was eye-opening for me. But and, of course, this is all in the context of, you know, we've had these serious discussions of what to do about all of us who have kids that are playing on some level in the summer. You know, obviously, they're not getting tested every day, which was, you know, what you heard a few months ago is like, well, you would have to test every day, every player, everybody in the bubble. Nobody can leave the bubble. So the thinking is evolving. So the SEC put together this task force, and the article you were just talking about, Chase, in The Athletic, interviews an associate professor at Missouri, Stephen Witt, a doctor who has helped craft recommendations for SEC schools to reconvene athletes safely. And so he's one of two infectious disease experts on the SEC's 14-person Return to Activity and Medical Guidance Task Force. So mass testing was not listed among the recommendations. The problem is, he says, with our testing, it doesn't tell us anything. So testing can only do so much. The nasal swab test, which we've heard a lot about, it costs about $100 each, and it has limitations. And so Witt cites these. It will likely not register positive tests the first few days after exposure and before a person shows symptoms of the virus. In other words, he could have it for a couple of days before you actually feel sick, and by that time you could infect any number of your teammates. Mass testing is faulty when rates of disease are low in a population group. And here's the quote. Infectious disease community does not believe in screening large populations of people who have very low incidence of disease as a scientific method of preventing further spread. It just does not seem to work. Now, in areas with higher prevalence, such as nursing homes, totally different science. But because the prevalence is different, the outcomes are different, and the interventions are different. And, of course, tests, as we just saw with the Bruins player, for example, they can result in false positives and false negatives with athletes. But they also concluded that, generally speaking, athletes of that age have a very, very low chance of responding very poorly if they get the virus. Now, I don't know what all that tells us, but it just tells us that they're moving away from the idea of you have to test everybody. It's cost prohibitive. And it doesn't really tell you what you need to know anyway. So I don't know where that puts us in the grand scheme of things of how we deal with this, but we're finding out things every week as the medical doctors continue to study. And we're also finding they don't all agree on what the best plan of action is.
Yeah, I mean, that's the problem, though. No, getting everybody to agree. And I think we have Darren now. But getting everybody to agree and be on the same page, I mean, that's going to be the toughest part and another obstacle that they have to overcome.
I think
Welcome
I'm
Darren
with you
to
guys.
The show. Hello, yeah. Darren.
I can't believe we went 3 months without any technical difficulties. But, hey, that day arrived, but better late than never.
Yeah, I'm glad that I was able to walk you through that and be able to connect. So
yes, yes. Well done by you and me. Or my IT specialist.
Yes. Lauren, your IT specialist.
Mm-hmm.
So. Hey, it took 3.5 months or whatever it was, and let's just make it a big one when it doesn't work. So.
Yep. So, guys, I'm obviously late to the party, so I'm going to crash it here, but I'm not even sure where you are because we were a little busy behind the scenes. So.
Well, here's what we were talking about, Darren, as time goes on, I think – it's just interesting to watch, especially through our viewpoint of how it affects the sports world. But, of course, the virus is everybody in the world literally is dealing with this and trying to figure out the best plan of action. And we started off by saying, or having the experts tell us, you got to test everybody. You'd have to test every day if you wanted to play. But that thinking is evolving here, and the SEC's return to play, the task force has said, you know, they're not recommending the widespread testing. It can only do so much. I don't think they're saying don't test anybody, but they're saying it's not going to tell you what you need to know anyway. And you just had this example come out this morning of a Boston Bruins player that tested positive upon returning for phase two, but he has since tested twice negative, and he's been asymptomatic all the way through. So I think it just shows you the challenges ahead of trying to figure out, does somebody actually have it, and what does it mean if somebody has it?
Yeah, I don't know if you guys saw the NBA. They've gone to, there are reports out there, rumblings. How about that? There are rumblings and sources that are putting stuff out there about their expected restart dates. I don't know if you guys have touched on this or you've talked about it. We talked about this yesterday where the NBA is moving forward, but there was some hesitancy with some of the players. I think Carmelo Anthony was one of them. I didn't even know he was still in the league, but good for him. here are some of the dates that we saw, or at least that's being reported in the rumblings out there. July 30th through August 14th. They will start seeding games. So at the end of July through the middle of August, they're going to be seeding games. Then in the middle of August, they'll start on August 15th and 16th. They'll have some play. They'll do play-in tournaments, and then on August 17th, the playoffs will officially begin. On August 30th, at the end of the month, heading into September. That's the second to last day. Family slash guest of teams can arrive. And then on August 31st through the middle of September, you'll have the conference semifinals. Middle of September to the end of September, conference finals. And then September 30th through the middle of October, the NBA finals. So there you have it. And were we was that news? And I know, like I said, none of this is official. It's rumblings. Its sources. Did we talked about the families and guests and who could be in the bubble and who could not. Did we think that they were going to be able to be there, or did some of the players being hesitant because of that change that? Help me with that. I don't remember.
I don't know that they've been specific. Like,
right.
I feel like if there's the option, maybe if you want to be in, you can be there, but you've got to stay there the whole time. And if you leave, you can't come back. I think that's an option that's been thrown out there, but I don't know that anything has been thrown out there for certain.
Well, I guess what I'm getting at is if this is really what's about to happen with the NBA and they're going to make it official, do we think that is the path the NHL is going to go down?
You know,
hub cities?
I do see that they've tried to put an emphasis on 14 of the 22 teams would be eliminated within the first 50 days or so.
In other words, 67 days, four would remain.
Right. So they're basically saying, okay, if you go into this bubble, if you're asking the players to go into the bubble, what's the longest you're going to be in there? And can you, you know, we're talking about a month or 2 months. Some teams would be eliminated well before that. So is that too much to ask of a player to do that? But they're saying, okay, the vast majority of the players would be done within 50 days or so. So that's not easy to be away from your family for 50 days. Now, what happens if an emergency comes up, right?
Right.
I think you have to have contingency plans for that.
Yeah. The way this model is set up, if you from start to literally finish, and if it went game seven all the way to the end, we're talking about 2.5 months. That's what it would take, start to finish in the NBA by the model they've put out there. And that's about right.
That's about the same as the
right. Ready for your next
maybe season. I think the NHL would be a little less than that because they're not playing
2.5.
Not playing 8 games.
Well, it would be right around there.
Yeah.
I would think.
I think you're
maybe
right.
Maybe a couple, you know, a week off, maybe. But I'm kind of thinking the same time frame. Which leads us to, okay, well, when do we think, you know, they're going to get cranked up. I think they'll probably get cranked up. Well, I don't know. It probably about the same, right? The play-in games, couldn't you see about the same timetable?
Yeah, well, now that we know July 10th, I mean, I think you have a better gauge.
So what do we slap on from July 10th? What do we put on there to get cranked up?
I've always heard 3 to 4 weeks.
Okay, so three, if it was 3 weeks, it's literally right at this, right?
Yeah.
It's right at what we're talking about, the end of July.
And that should surprise no one because it feels like the NHL and the NBA have been pretty much on the same page. You can tell that they have been swapping ideas since this whole thing began. And and they always do that because they share arenas, and I think they've always had a good relationship. But it does feel like that they're going to be around the same dates, maybe give or take a few days.
I think they said they wanted 3 weeks to train, so I think they're targeting somewhere around August 1st to actually play a game. The question would be, in my mind, would you see these exhibition games? I think everybody wants to play a couple of exhibition games. Would they be like last week in July?
That's what I would think.
And then you would play for real around August 1st. I think that's what the ideal scenario would be, but I think they've tried to build in a little flexibility if they have to push things back for a few days.
August 1st. Where have I heard that? Where has that come up?
Probably your ears. Probably where you heard it.
Yeah, that's true. That's actually a very good point.
And it looks like it is on a collision course for right at August 1st.
That seems that way, and it's weird to say. It's weird to think, oh, they're going to be playing hockey and in the NBA in August, but that's where it's going to be. Going to be a busy end of the summer for sure, but a fun one.
Well, I'll tell you what, going through all of this like we have, and to know here, hopefully, in not the too distant future, we're going to have so much stuff on our plate we won't know what to do with. Right? It's kind of like we're going to be. They always tell you don't go to the grocery store hungry. We're probably going to come to the grocery store every day hungry, right?
Pretty hungry.
Yeah,
sure.
We're going to. It's going to be crazy.
How about starved?
Right, a little famished. I mean, we are going to be ready to eat. And we may regret it. We may end up throwing up after the meal, but man, is it going to be fun to go through it? Because we're going to be more than starved, and we're going to have a lot to choose from. It is going to be a sports buffet every single day. There's going to be so much stuff going on, it'll be hard to keep up with, which will be a great problem to have.
A fantastic problem.
We'll certainly never have had an August like this if it all plays out the way we think it's going to here.
Nope. You're right about that. In fact, these little media days, they might want to do those, make sure they crank those out in July.
Yeah, because nobody's going to pay attention.
I would not make sure – I would definitely not go into the month of August. I would make sure you are absolutely wrapped up in July for sure, all those media days, which I think they typically do. I know usually the SEC is first, and then everybody else follows. I think like SEC and like Big Ten usually seem to be the first ones up. But, yeah, you might want to get in there in mid-July and get those things cranked up and cranked out, because once everything hits, man, you're going to get lost in the shuffle of all the stuff going on. We'll come back. We'll talk a little bit more in depth about the NHL, return to play, a little bit more about the Predators and their matchup. We'll do that with Adam Vingan from The Athletic to start the second hour of Darren Donick and Chase. That's next on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free to play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino.